IFPRI Policy Seminar, Beyond Gender Myths, Closing the Knowledge Gap in Agriculture and Food Security, held on November 22, 2013, in Washington, D.C. Speaker, Terry Rainey from FAO.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for coming. We have a really stellar crowd today, and we'll probably have people in our overflow rooms as well, so during the Q&A, we will juggle questions back and forth between this room, the overflow rooms, and then our virtual audience. So a couple years ago, when the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations was beginning to do its 2011 SOFA report, the State of Food and Agriculture report, on gender and agriculture, it became clear that there are huge gaps in the evidence base. So they asked IFPRI to undertake some studies for the report. Since IFPRI has always championed evidence-based policymaking, and since work on gender features prominently on our research agenda, it was a good fit. A huge amount of new material was generated as a result of that collaboration, so FAO asked IFPRI to also collaborate on a book bringing together all of the studies to be published in 2014. In the course of producing that book, even more knowledge gaps became apparent. Hence, today's seminar on creating a solid evidence base on gender and agriculture, as opposed to basing policies and interventions on lingering gender myths. So, today's speakers include Terry Rainey from FAO, who will highlight key messages of the SOFA report on gender and agriculture, and how that report catalyzed new research on gender and agriculture. Agnes Kusumbing from IFPRI will talk about the gender asset gap and its implications for agricultural and rural development. Ruth Meinzendick, also from IFPRI, will discuss social capital and how it interacts with gender in agricultural development programs. And finally, Deborah Rubin from Cultural Practice LLC will talk about promoting gender equitable agricultural value chains. And just as a note, Cultural Practice LLC is a woman-owned small business working in international development. So without further ado, I'll begin introducing our speakers, and Terry, you're up first.
Thank you, Gwendolyn, and thank you to everyone here at IFPRI for organizing this seminar and for inviting me to participate in it. I want to thank particularly Agnes and Ruth. It's just such a pleasure to be back working with them. As Gwendolyn indicated, when we started work on the State of Food and Agriculture 2010-11, our goal, among other things, was to help debunk some of the gender myths and feminist fables that were in circulation, were in wide circulation at that time. And these are things that all of the advocates were saying. So the women produce 60 to 80% of the food, and they only own 2% of the land, and things that were repeated over and over and over. My favorite version of that particular myth is that, you know, women produce all of the food with none of the resources. I thought, oh golly, that's great. We should put women in charge of everything. And we wanted to do this because we thought that the data available, the evidence available on women in agriculture was just so bad. Okay? And in fact, the data are limited. In many cases, at least at that time, the data were fairly old. And they told a picture that was much more nuanced than these myths that we saw. One of my favorite parts of that State of Food and Agriculture report, and I have to say, I'm a words person. I'm not a person who generally gets excited about numbers, but one of the most exciting parts of the State of Food and Agriculture 2010-11 is the annex tables. Right? And the annex tables are exciting because, well, one, I got to be a little bit subversive. And the editor of the State of Food and Agriculture usually doesn't get to be very subversive. But I was subversive in the sense that we published all the blanks. Okay? So for every country in the world, we published the gender indicators that were available. So the share of women in agriculture, the share of female-headed households, the percentage of land held by women, and we see line after line of blanks, 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 and I think that sent a very subtle message calling for improvements in the basic data that were available, and then improvements in the way those data are analyzed. And I'm happy to say I think that the SOFA report helped advance that agenda. You know, I think we may have helped dispel some of the myths. We've been accused of creating some myths of our own, and we can talk about those in a little bit. But I'm very excited by this new book that's coming out in the spring, Gender and Agriculture, Closing the Knowledge Gap, because it really brings together some of the really foundational research and evidence available on women in agriculture, much more than we were able to put in the very slender volume that is the State of Food and Agriculture. So I'm very excited about that. Now, just recapping briefly the State of Food and Agriculture, one of the things we found, well, is that it's very difficult to generalize about women in agriculture, partly because of the lack of data and the prevalence of these myths. But one of the things we found that's fairly universal, okay, and so we reported the universals, women tend to operate smaller farms than men, okay, and these are data based on the living standards household surveys that shows data for male and female households. Okay. So just looking at that subset of women, female households, they operate smaller farms. And across the board, they generate lower yields than male farmers. Okay. Now, this study is from the classic Udry study from 1994, but a handful of other studies showed similar results, that no matter the crop, the production mix, the geographical area, female farmers were generating lower yields. Well, why is that? Was it because they're bad farmers? Well, no. It's because they have access to fewer inputs. Okay? Now, this figure shows fertilizer, but this is indicative of the whole range of inputs that farmers need in order to be productive. Mechanical equipment, credit, education, livestock, you get similar pictures that more or less across the board, women have less access to these essential inputs. And so we did a little thought experiment. We said, what would happen if we closed that yield gap? Okay, we didn't do any fancy modeling. There's no econometrics. There's no CGE. We're not taking into account market effects. Just a simple little experiment. What would happen if we closed the yield gap? And we found, on average, this yield gap from the literature is around 20 to 30%. So we said, let's close that on the land held by women. We would therefore increase production on their land by 20 to 30%. This would work out to national level gains of 2.5 to 4% for developing country agriculture. Now that may not seem like a lot, but it's actually quite a significant number. And we put that number into FAO's formula for food insecurity, for calculating the number of people who are malnourished. And we found that just increasing production by that amount could potentially reduce the number of undernourished people in developing countries by 12 to 17%. That's equivalent to 100 to 150 million people. That's a huge potential gain that could be achieved. Now, these numbers have been criticized, actually, within FAO, but they've been criticized on both grounds. One faction says they're too big, okay, that this couldn't possibly be because, well, you know, women aren't really farmers, and, you know, and households are already maximizing their welfare, and so you couldn't possibly get this. The other faction, which I actually find much more compelling, thinks that these numbers are far too low, okay? Because we've based them just on female-headed households. We've based it just on the land controlled by women. Okay? And so we know that women are far more active in agriculture, far more heavily involved than those very narrow measures would indicate. So we think this number, if anything, is too small. We also know that it's just the first round of benefits that could be achieved by closing the gender gap in access to inputs. We know that putting more resources into the hands of women leads to better health, nutrition, and education outcomes for children, and that this feeds directly into higher human capital, which promotes broader economic growth. So we think our little simple mental exercise, okay, gave us just a hint of the gains that could be achieved. And I'm happy to hear that that little exercise is actually generating additional research and additional evidence that I think we'll hear more about as we go through the rest of the seminar. Finally, the process of producing this data, food and agriculture, and generating the bringing together the evidence that was available at that time, frankly, resulted in far more evidence and material than we could possibly squeeze into the State of Food and Agriculture, which gave us the brilliant idea, along with Agnes and Ruth, to edit a volume, bringing together across a number of domains the state of knowledge that exists on women in agriculture. And we have done that. We like to think of it as a comprehensive handbook on the state of knowledge of gender in agriculture. And we believe that closing the knowledge gaps in this area can have really transformational change for society. Forthcoming spring 2014. Thank you.